Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Hey folks, welcome to the Fallon Forum. Thanks to our local small business partners, including Gateway Marketing Cafe, David Drake Family Psychiatry, real estate agent Joe Henry. Also thanks to the Des Moines Ivers Session for our bumper music. It's my delight to introduce to you Lee Camp. He's the former host of Redacted Tonight. He's also an investigative comedian and self-described radical satirist. He's also an author and a journalist, and I've known him a long time. Lee, welcome to the program.
Hey, Ed, how you doing?
Yeah, we go back to 2008, I think, or 9 or 10. No.
Yeah, not maybe a little before Occupy, you think?
Yeah, because I was being sued by a congressman. And we put on a comedy show called Lawsuits Are No Laughing Matter, and you came and you highlighted that, and it went really well. And we basically won the lawsuit because it was one of those slap suits that corporations usually file against nonprofits, but sometimes, you know, status quo politicians file it against upstarts, and so that's what described that situation. And yeah, once it was, you know, the campaign was over, you just dropped it.
Really? Yeah. Well, I was happy to support you, and yeah, you're doing something right if you're getting lawsuits from congresspeople.
And you're doing something right if you're getting canceled and censored. And you, again, self-described, but I don't think there's any competition for the most censored comedian in America.
Yeah, I've asked people to try and tell me if they can list someone who's a more censored comedian, and generally they give me people who aren't censored at all. They say, "Oh, Dave Chappelle," and I'm like, "Dave Chappelle is in $100 million deal with Netflix. How is that censored?"
What about Jimmy Kimmel or Stephen Colbert? Are they in the running?
Well, first of all, Kimmel still has his show. I think he was off for 1 week, so that doesn't really count. And Colbert has been fired from his show. However, I also had my show destroyed by government sanctions. And Colbert will certainly, if he chooses to, move on to another major corporate mainstream outlet, which is about the polar opposite of everything that's happened to me. So no, I would not say that he's at my level. If Colbert leaves his show or gets kicked off his show, and then they ban his YouTube channel, ban his podcast on Spotify, ban his TikTok page, shadow ban his Twitter, shadow ban his Facebook, then we can talk.
Okay, those are all things that have happened to you.
Yes.
Yeah, and I first came to know of you when you were a guest on Fox News.
Yeah, the one time I was a guest on Fox News.
Well, and I understand why it was the one time, because you called them out for being a clown fest or something. I can't remember what you said.
I called them a parade of propaganda and a festival of ignorance, and for some odd reason, they didn't want me back.
Yeah, and I know they went from that interview with you to something completely vacuous. I mean, it was a hilarious shift. It just kind of
I remember
point.
Well. It was someone who wrote a book on how Captain Kirk got laid a lot.
Probably so here important. In Iowa, because he was born in Iowa, right?
Important news.
Well, anyway, that was your first cancellation, I suppose. And you went on to build a pretty impressive network of people, you know, very interested in your work. And I mean, you've been through from one thing to another, and now your most recent program, you have one called Redacted Tonight. Now your current program is Unredacted Tonight. That's clever. I see what you did there.
Thank you. Although I have to say, as of this week, it is now also former program, because I have finally, it lasted a little over a year. It was so for people who hadn't heard of me, I had a TV show called Redacted Tonight. It lasted 8 years, weekly comedy. Unlike every other comedy news host, I wrote all and write all my own words. They all have teams of writers. But anyway, lasted 8 years, shut down by government sanctions. Just a year ago, a little over a year ago, I recreated it, but completely independent, not on TV, just my own YouTube, funded by me. And it was called Unredacted Tonight. And after, now that it's been 13, 14 months with the YouTube suppression, making it impossible, it gained an audience for a little while and then YouTube just shut it down. And I can't afford to keep it going without some form of growth, some form of eyeballs. So yeah, I've had to shut it down again. And that's what people may not even know the term. That's what's called shadow banning. When they don't actually delete your channel. They deleted my old YouTube channel, but they don't actually delete your channel. They just make it so that almost no one can see it.
And on what grounds did they delete your old YouTube channel?
They gave no grounds and no right to appeal, no reason. It was just banned around the world. That happened the same week that that the TV show was shut down, a TV outlet was shut down. And that same week as well was when they banned my Spotify podcast, which also no reason, no right to appeal, no contact, nothing. It just disappeared off the face of the earth. And I've recreated a lot of these things. I have a new YouTube channel, youtube.com/momentofclarity. I have a new podcast on Spotify called The Lee Camp Show. But for anybody who's ever tried to build an audience on one of these platforms, banning or censoring, you know, deleting it is like taking a nuclear bomb to any kind of growth on the platforms.
So you were seeing continued growth until suddenly it just went, it went silent.
The new show, yeah. The new one that is still, if you want to watch old episodes, the last one came out last Thursday. If you want to watch those, there's youtube.com/momentofclarity. So that's my newer channel. It's almost got 100,000 subscribers. But yeah, I started a year ago and it started doing well. It started doing what a YouTube show with some fan base should do, which is you grow, you get subscribers. Those subscribers are alerted to when new shows come out. It keeps growing. You know, it's based on this organic model of people subscribe and then they, more people see it and more people come. And, but after about 3 months, you know, and they don't give me any reason. I don't know if it sets off some sort of algorithmic alarm that I've said the word capitalism or Israel or Gaza genocide too many times. But all of a sudden, the number is just cratered and they don't ban it. Like, it's not like you try and watch it and it's gone. It's just they stop alerting anyone to new episodes. They stop promoting it, that YouTube won't show it to people as a recommendation. And at that point, you know, you're dealing with just a trickle of viewers.
And remind our audience who owns YouTube.
Google.
Google. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, how do you keep your work, your message going now?
Well, I'd say my biggest platform that I'm trying to get people to follow me on, because I haven't been suppressed there yet, is Substack. So that's Real Lee Camp on Substack. You can subscribe for free there or become a member, either one. Most of my stuff is almost all my stuff is free to read and see there. And then I also am at patreon.com/LeeCamp. And I still post on all these platforms. You know, an hilarious example to explain shadow banning to people is Facebook was my biggest platform for years. I had 330,000 followers. Then Facebook just decided in 2016, about the time that Bernie Sanders almost won the presidency, that I needed to be shadow banned. So they capped me at 330,000. I never gained another follower. And they stopped showing my posts to people. So no one could really read them. And nine years go by and I hardly even was thinking about it, but 9 years go by and I put out a tweet to Facebook. I just said, hey, Facebook, this is a few months ago. Hey, Facebook, I'm shadow banned. No one can follow me for 9 years now. Why? And then all of a sudden, they didn't respond, but all of a sudden it flipped back on and my Facebook could grow. And it's grown to 360,000 subscribers now, followers now. And then they turned it off again a couple months ago.
Right. And we all know who owns Facebook.
Yeah, Meta, Zuckerberg, Instagram, yeah. All of them.
I mean, it's hard to know what to do about that because so much of our lives now are tied into social media. I mean, I try to minimize my time on social media, and I think it's probably a wise thing to do. But with the mainstream media being owned by, well, how much of it is owned by Ellison now?
I know Ellison's got a lot of it. I was old school banned from TikTok before Ellison even took over. It was about two.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. It was about 2 months into the Gaza genocide, and I was talking about that a lot, and they again banned me with no right to appeal, which everyone else who'd been banned told me they got a little screen that said, "Would you like to appeal?" I wasn't given that option.
Well, but let's switch gears a little bit to, I mean, there are plenty of reasons why the establishment would like to ban you. I suspect that probably the biggest one is your criticism of what's going on in Israel. Am I right that you are a Jewish of Jewish descent?
Yeah, no, I'm Jewish. Grew up Jewish. I as I think everyone with any kind of soul or heart should be, I am very, very, we'll say, critical of Israel and their ongoing genocide which got against Gaza, which has not ended, by the way. They're still starving them to death as of this day. So let's not pretend this genocide is over. By the way, even the deputy secretary. Secretary of State, I think, under Biden, she just said in a video clip just the other day, she called it a genocide. So this is even top-level Biden officials now calling it genocide.
Hey, so did Marjorie Taylor Greene.
I'm always hesitant of people who go, well, this fascist said one thing I like, so let's get on her team. But anyway, yes, and so. That recently, that is one of the things that I've definitely been censored and suppressed for. Prior to that, I think it just had to do with strong criticism of the U.S. empire. I was a big proponent of Bernie Sanders' first run, and I think I made a big difference. That was before we were suppressed and we were getting big numbers, and I think that made a big difference. But yeah, it's plenty of things, plenty of reasons. I certainly go after capitalism a lot more than most, even in a lot of left-wing spaces. So there's a lot of reasons that I think my stuff is considered somehow more dangerous than people's spouting hate speech on YouTube.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of your more provocative posts about the what Israel's doing in Gaza and Lebanon and the West Bank was your position on October 7th regarding the use of what's called the Hannibal Doctrine or
Yeah,
Hannibal Directive,
directive.
which again basically is asserting that Israel, it wasn't Hamas who killed all 1,200 Israelis. I mean, yeah, Hamas was involved, but Israel itself actually went in and killed a bunch of the
Yeah,
hostages, which is crazy, crazy to think about.
I've written about this extensively, and people need to understand this is not my idea. This is not my analysis. This is top Israeli officials have admitted to this. You can go read about it. You can read about it in Israeli media. Haaretz has written about it. And one of the top level people to admit to this is Yoav Gallant, the former defense minister at the time of October 7th. This is the guy running the Israeli military at the time of October 7th, has said publicly they used the Hannibal Directive. The Hannibal Directive is Israel deciding that instead of allowing hostages to be taken, we will kill everyone. We will kill the hostage takers. We will kill the hostages. We will kill anyone nearby. We will kill all of the human beings in that area. And there is evidence upon evidence upon evidence, mountains of evidence, literal mountains of evidence, showing that Israel did exactly that. They murdered hundreds, and we will never know the exact number. But that 1,200 number that our media still loves to say to this day is loads of people being killed by Israel. And like I've said, this has been admitted in Israeli media. And oddly, is this crazy, what a crackpot thing that can never be said in U.S. mainstream media. It really is just
Why
unbelievable.
does the U.S. mainstream media ignore when so much evidence is from the Israeli government itself?
Well, the US mainstream media, I think there's tons of direct censorship where they won't let critical of Israel reports be come out. I mean, prior to October 7th, there were zero. Now there's occasionally some, but there's a lot of self-censorship where journalists within the mainstream media, and you can hear this from mainstream media journalists who are no longer there. You can hear it from Chris Hedges and so many others. There's a lot of self-censorship where they know that they'll basically lose their job if they criticize Israel, especially prior to October 7th. They'll lose their job if they just spout off about the Hannibal Directive on a live broadcast. And so rather than even get near that line, they just avoid ever mentioning it.
Has the Hannibal Directive been used in the past and other
Yeah, I don't remember all the details. They did use it against Lebanon many years ago, and then supposedly they, turned it off. They said we're not going to do that anymore. And then on October 7th, they very much used it again. But there's a lot more about October 7th that people need to realize, and I highly recommend they go read my column, well-researched links, everything column at realecamp.substack.com. But the other things that people need to realize is Israel knew October 7th was coming for a long time, a year ahead of time at least. The New York freaking Times has put out an article, you can still go read it, saying Israel knew that October 7th was happening a year in advance. And they didn't just know something was going to happen. They didn't just have this vague Hamas might do something. They had a 70-page document with every detail called Jericho Wall, the every detail. And guess what? Hamas stuck to the plan to the word. Every bit in that plan was exactly true. There's also loads of evidence that Israel pulled the soldiers away from the wall. The video cameras of the wall at the time have the video camera footage has essentially most of it disappeared. You have the they have a job in the IDF called spotters, which specifically it's all women, and their specific job is to watch these videos of the wall and see if anything's going on. And testimony after testimony after testimony from the spotters who survived and from their family say these spotters were telling the Israeli military for upwards of 2 years, but definitely for a year, for months, saying Hamas is planning something. We're watching them train. They're getting ready. We know what they're going to do. This is going to be large. They kept putting in these reports after reports after reports, and nothing was done. Now, why was nothing done? Because this was the casus belli that Israel, that Netanyahu needed to commit this genocide. And you just, the evidence is all there. It's not some just theory. It's like, go read the New York Times article. Go read my Substack. It's
Well,
just
we
unbelievable.
see what they're doing. They're working very quickly to, I mean, in comparatively quickly to establish a greater Zion, greater Israel.
Yeah, Greater Israel, which Huckabee said in his interview a few weeks ago. He said, well, the Bible says they can take it all. So you have the U.S. ambassador to Israel saying essentially the U.S. stance is Israel's allowed to take all of these other countries. If you go Google a map of Greater Israel, it includes all of Palestine, it includes large swaths of Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Egypt, even Saudi Arabia. And this is what they're working towards. This is where Israel is trying to head.
And this October 7th gave them the catalyst to do that, the reason to do that.
Yeah, it gave them the reason, the propaganda campaign, and to commit this genocide, which has now allowed them to steal over half of Gaza. If you look where the current map is of survivors, where they're allowed to go in Gaza, they've lost over 50% of it. And as I mentioned, this is still a genocide. Like you have people in a tiny concentration camp. You're allowing very little food in. People are starving to death. Babies are dying. And of course, occasionally Israel still bombs, but the real death and destruction is disease and hunger.
So you're an American Jew, and yet because of this opinion, I'm guessing you've been called anti-Semitic.
Oh, sure, you get that insanity. One of the things that Israel has worked very hard to do is to get everybody to conflate Israel with Judaism. So you criticize Israel, oh, you're criticizing all Jews. No, I'm criticizing Israel. I'm criticizing a nation state. I'm criticizing a government. And they've worked very hard to do that. And so, in that way, they actually create anti-Semitism. They create real anti-Semitism, not the fake stuff they claim. They create real anti-Semitism because they have succeeded in getting a bunch of idiots around this world to think that Israel speaks for all Jews or that all Jews are Israel. And that's what creates anti-Semitism. Then you also have the fact that a lot of people don't understand Zionist does not mean Jewish. Zionist means a supporter of the Israeli state. And there are more Christian Zionists in the United States than there are Jews in the world. There are anti-Zionist Jews like myself. And so people, again, and Israel's worked hard to do this as well, conflate these words, confuse them, and then think that being anti-Zionist is anti-Semitic. Not at all. And there are millions of Zionist Christians, pro-Israel Christians, a lot of evangelical Christians believe that the Bible says all the Jews need to be in Israel for the end times to come about so the Jews can burn in hell. So they very much support Israel so that they can bring about the end times and make sure all the Jews burn. It really is just
And
insanity.
they themselves will get caught up in the rapture.
Yeah, and then they'll get to go to
Float, float,
wherever.
float away.
Yeah,
Float
float
away.
away.
Yeah.
So but the confusion is intentional. The confusion is Israel views it as a propaganda win to get people to confuse all this stuff.
Yeah. And I get why by I guess by religious crazies, in my opinion, like Huckabee or Pete Hegseth, I believe that all this has to come to pass because they've got this destructive mentality about the end of the world, that somehow they'll get saved and the rest of us will get, burned up when Israel gets
Yeah.
established this way. But that's not that doesn't explain most. I mean, that explains some in the Republican Party and perhaps even a controlling influence within the Republican Party, but it doesn't explain the Democratic Party or the Democratic perspective. Yet you have Democratic administrations that have been just as enabling of the building of this Israeli state that as Republicans have been.
Yeah, and a lot of that has to do with where their funding's coming from. It's not just AIPAC, which is the largest one, but there's other they're called the Israel Lobby as a group. There's other ones like NORPAC and stuff that are massive pro-Israel money PACs that dump money into candidacies. But also if you come out against Israel, they may not just fund your opponent. They'll also sorry, they may not just stop funding you. They'll also fund an opponent to bring you down in the primaries, et cetera. We've seen them do that a lot. So yeah, they're afraid of the kind of money game. But I don't think actually the motivation of a lot of these officials has to do with religion. Maybe Hegseth is some sort of messianic lunatic, but Trump's not actually religious. He will
Sure.
feign a thing here or there to get religious people to support him, but. The real heart of it is, U.S. empire, the petrodollar, oil. They view Israel as the unsinkable U.S. battleship in the Middle East. They view it as helping them control the Middle East, the only nuclear power in the Middle East. So there's a lot of very useful reasons that the U.S. empire wants Israel to be strong and to destroy others. I'd say that's probably the biggest reason, but then the funding certainly keeps Congress in line because I'd say a lot of congressional members may not be as fully brought into the inner circle about how to defend the petrodollar. And so I think that their reason for a lot of them for supporting Israel, quote unquote, is just they know it's the end of their political career if they come out against it.
Yeah, and I mean AIPAC does and other interests do pump a lot of money into campaigns. When I ran for Congress, I never took a penny from any PAC. And the most aggressive PAC that was trying to get me to meet with them was AIPAC. And they called my office repeatedly. My scheduler, who happens to be a very strong Palestinian activist, was insisted, no, he's not going to meet with you. He's not going to meet with you. And finally, they called and said, hey, we're in town. We are in Des Moines. We need to meet with the candidate. And she said, nope, sorry. But they were by far the most aggressive pack. And
Yeah,
I think
and that shows that it's not just you're running for state. Congress, right?
No, that was for U.S.
Oh,
Congress.
that was for U.S. Congress.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it shows that they're definitely going after everyone, and they want to make it clear that if you sign with them, you get a big hunk of money, and if you don't sign with them, well, they're giving that big hunk of money to the other guy.
So I want to ask you how we turn this around, and maybe I'll throw this out there as a starting point. At some point, evil overplays its hand, and it seems like that's happened. And more people are turning against the Israeli state. And perhaps we will begin to see a turnaround in terms of, U.S. support for the Israel war machine. But maybe I'm being overly optimistic. What are your thoughts on how we turn this around?
I don't think you're going to see because Israel's so useful to the United States, the US might keep them in check a little bit in certain areas if we could keep moving the needle on popular understanding and anger about the genocide. And now Israel is aiming towards the genocide in Lebanon, which look at some of the best known international anti-genocide organizations like the Lipkin Institute. They're all flashing red alerts about a genocide in southern Lebanon. But anyway, I think the biggest change it has to come with the waning and the slow dissipation of the U.S. empire. This is not saying that the United States as a country couldn't exist anymore, but the idea that we're going to own the world and have full hegemony and crush anybody who gets in the way of that is just such a catastrophic, horrific way to go about our foreign policy. It's been going on for decades. This is not just Donald Trump. You take the UN report on the harm caused by US sanctions, which is economic war, combined with the report on the number of killed in the global war on terror, and you get 44 million people that have been murdered by the US war machine or US economic war since 1970, 44 million. And that's a low count because that's actually not counting a lot of other things. But it really is just horrific. And all of that is done to keep the US empire strong, to keep control. What Trump's doing right now in Iran is intended at keeping the US hegemony. And they view Iran as a linchpin for Chinese energy and for against the petrodollar. And of course, it's all backfiring. If anything sped up the end of the petrodollar, it's attacking Iran like he
Yeah,
did.
right.
But I don't think you see us truly backing off support of Israel. I think what we need to see, and what's more likely, is just a waning of U.S. empire. Writ large.
That'd be nice. It'd be nice to see if empire across the board would become a kind of a historical relic. I don't know if
Yeah.
yeah, you laugh, right? I know. I
And
know it'd be
after that, nation states, we'll go back to just loving one another because it's another human being rather than where are you from? What skin color are you?
Well, Lee, these are tough conversations, and again, us being critical of our own country does not make us anti-American
No,
any more than our criticism of Israel makes you anti-Semitic or me.
to want a country to be better by loving and creating a sustainable world, that's not anti anything. That's not anti-American. It's
You may
maybe anti-war.
and the Pope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Leah, thanks so much for joining us. So, folks, we've been talking with Lee Camp. Leah, folks want to continue to hear from you, continue to follow your work. What's the best way for them to do that?
Real Lee Camp. That's my name's just seven letters, LEECAMP. Real Lee Camp at Substack.com. And I highly recommend, whether you agree with it or not, I highly recommend you go there and scroll down and read the article on October 7th and learn the truth with all the links and hyperlinks and sourcing and everything else. And that'll take you kind of everything, but I do have a website, leecamp.com as well.
All right. Thanks so much, Lee.
Thanks, Adam.
Back in a minute with you on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515 515- 508-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Hey, thanks to our local small business partners, including Gateway Marketing Cafe, Western Optometry, Architecture by Synthesis, and Story County Veterinary Clinic. All right, so I want to start off with a story that I guess it's a little funny. It's a little sad. It's a little weird. You know, you think of Florida Man, and you think of all the crazy stories about Florida Man, the stereotypical nut job. Anyway, of course, most Florida men are pretty good people, including people I know down there. Anyway, but this is about a Massachusetts woman. And the story appeared in the New York Times, and I'm not quite clear. It was, again, it appeared this week in the New York Times, or last week, actually. And I'm not quite sure how old the story it is, but I dug into it a little bit because it intrigued me, because I am, and my wife and I are both beekeepers. We have birds and bees urban farm, and we keep bees, of course. So this woman was jailed after a swarm of bees was unleashed against law enforcement. My problem with the press called it a swarm of bees. And okay, it's not a swarm of bees. Swarming is what bees do on their own to split a hive when a hive gets too crowded. So it's not really a swarm of bees. It's a bunch of... Anyway, they got angry. And I know why they got angry, because somebody knocked the hives over. This woman, Rebecca Wood, she was upset that a friend of hers was being evicted from a home in, I can't remember the name of the town now, Long Meadow, Massachusetts. And so she arrived with these beekeepers, with these beehives, and she began opening them in the driveway, thinking that would help stop the eviction of her friend, who was also apparently undergoing cancer treatment. She pretended, or later in court, she pretended to do that because she wanted the bees to be able to forage on the, quote, lovely flowering landscape. But that seems just like a gloss. Anyway, somehow, the story, there's a bunch of stories about this. One was in the Yahoo News, where it talked about hives being knocked over. I have no idea by whom. I'm guessing it was the beekeeper who was protesting the eviction. And then the bees repeatedly stung officers and the sheriff's staff. One person was hospitalized. Others suffered stings to the face and the hands. And when she was told, Rebecca Wood, the beekeeper, when she was told that some of the respondents were allergic, she was said to have said, quote, "Oh, you're allergic. Good." That's crazy talk, because, you know, if you are allergic and you don't have the appropriate tool to prevent an anaphylactic shock, you could die. I speak as someone who is allergic to bees, a bee venom, but I know how to take care of myself, protect myself, and in the backup, in the case I do get stung and I do have a reaction, I have what I need to prevent that from being life-threatening. So this is kind of crazy stuff on so many levels. You know, there's plenty of good reasons to have bees, folks. Honey is one of them. Pollinating your crops is another one. Just the joy of seeing them do their work is another. Using them as a tool to exercise your First Amendment right is not one of them. Anyway, that was just, to me, a fascinating little news clip that I had to share with you. Sorry. The next item I want to share with you is regarding the Catholic Church, which, if you've heard, is growing. significantly. And this is, you know, for many years, for decades, the Catholic Church has been in decline. It appears that, I mean, there's various reasons, of course. Some people, I mean, we live in really difficult, lonely, desperate times, and some people are finding some comfort in going back to a community. And again, it's hard to find community sometimes, you know, in some environments. I mean, look at some of the suburban housing complexes where you can live in the same building with hundreds of people and know no one and have no connection. So yeah, maybe a way out of that, you know, loneliness by design is through a church community. So I get that. But I think my impression is, and there are plenty of other people who have the same impression, is that the main thing driving growth in the Catholic Church is the last two popes, and especially the current pope, Pope Leo. I mean, his whole focus has been on immigration and on social justice and peace, and just kind of creating a more personable approach to interaction with the church. You know, I think it's encouraging. You know, I'm spiritual. I'm not deeply religious. I would much rather spend my Sunday morning in the garden or out in the woods than in a church. Yeah, just truth be told. But I get the importance of religion. I also understand how religion can and is often abused. But this is good. The people are finding community and they're finding a reason to identify with an organization that is speaking for their concerns. And again, a lot of it has to do the other one I should add to the things that this Pope and the previous Pope talk about are the environment, protecting the environment, addressing climate change. And so here's my thought. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party, but especially the Democratic Party, could learn a thing or two from what's happening in the Catholic Church. Because the Democratic Party is going the opposite direction. It's losing membership, losing interest. And you know, it's not going to thrive or be any kind of a functional, you know, political entity if it continues to move in that direction. And that could have been said about the Catholic Church not that many years ago, of course. And now we see this regrowth of interest, membership, involvement, and again, a lot of it has to do with the type of leadership we're seeing in the Catholic Church. Now, I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to pick up on that theme because I want to talk about leadership within the Democratic Party and a particularly interesting example of where the party might go. This focuses on the U.S. Senate race in the state of Maine. Back in a minute with more for you on the Fallon Forum.
Make me a channel of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me bring your love. Where there is injury, your pardon, Lord. And where there's doubt, true faith in. Be a channel of your peace. Where there's despair in life, let me bring hope. Where there is darkness, only light. And where there's sadness,
thanks to our nonprofit partners, including Circle of Peacemakers. Formerly the Catholic Peace Ministry, Circle of Peacemakers works with people of all faiths toward a world without war. CPM opposes runaway military spending while domestic needs go unmet. Instead of endless wars, CPM supports diplomacy. Visit circleofpeacemakers.com. At Westrum Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrum and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrum's primary concern. Dr. Westrum and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrum Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Hey, thanks again to all the individuals, small businesses, nonprofits, other folks that help make this program possible. Your interest in this alternative form of media is greatly appreciated. Hey, we were talking about how the Catholic Church has seen tremendous growth. And maybe leave it to me, I suppose, but I see a lesson for that for the Democratic Party, who have seen the opposite of growth, seen a lot of erosion. I know Democrats are feeling heady right now about their prospects for doing well in the midterm elections, but my thought is, you know, the party is held in such disregard by so many people that they need an entirely new direction and a new type of leader. And we may see that emerging in the state of Maine. So Graham Plattner, there's a great story in the Maine Monitor by a former classmate of his, a high school classmate, a guy named Josh Keefe. Plattner is running for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate. He wants to take on Collins, Senator Collins, who's been there a long time, the Republican senator from Maine who occasionally votes against her party. Occasionally. So Plattner, Keefe writes about this in the Maine Monitor. Plattner ran for a student body president back in whenever it was, 20 years ago or so. And at a candidate forum, he proposed collective action to overturn some school policy. He couldn't remember which school policy it was. And he said, hey, they can't suspend us all. To which the history teacher who was serving as the moderator interjected to remind Plattner and everyone else that, yes, in fact, the school can suspend you all. So that's a great way to start the article. Keefe points out that the students elected the safe candidate, a future chiropractor. Nothing against chiropractors, right? But Plattner, he didn't stop there. About the same time, he skipped school one day to protest the Iraq War. George W. Bush, who actually has roots in Maine, visited a local airport. And when Plattner was there protesting, he was forcibly removed by the Secret Service. And the high school yearbook is a great photo of the high school yearbook page that shows him with the tag, quote, most likely to start a revolution. So, 20, 25 years later, Plattner, who's now 41 years old and an oyster farmer, he's the probable Democratic nominee for the U.S. Senate. He's probably going to be the one to take on Susan Collins because he's running, even though he's running against the current governor. You know, I mean, you would think the governor would have the hands down the easy shot at winning that primary. All the polling shows him winning by double digits. That could change. It's still about a month before the election or so. And I can't remember when the main primary is. Our primary in Iowa is first week of June. It's considered by some to be a remarkable political story because you've got, he's a former U.S. Marine, oyster farmer, never previously run for office except for a school president. and of course, the establishment is not happy. Interestingly, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are supporting him. Janet Mills, the governor who's running, is backed by Chuck Schumer and Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear. So it's kind of clear the populist, progressive, anti-establishment element of the party, Warren, Sanders, are getting behind Plattner. The establishment component is getting behind the governor, Janet Mills. So and of course, they're going to try to find anything they can to take him down, right? So the national media kind of quickly latched on to the concerns that were raised about him. He apparently had made some comments that were construed as anti-women, that construed as anti-Israel, pro-Nazi. And, you know, I'm sorry, when you're young, you should just kind of let that go. you should... They're okay. There are some things that you do when you're young that should always be
cause for concern, but when there are some things you can say or do when you're young that, you know, you remember your brain is only partially formed. It doesn't fully form until you're 25. I think what he said was every time a Tomahawk missile hits a kid's school, somebody makes a profit. That's actually very true. You know, there are defense contractors, especially now with a $1.5 trillion budget being proposed for the military. There are defense contractors getting rich off war. And whether the bomb hits a military base or a kid's school in Iran, they're still going to get rich. So, I mean, I think he's saying really interesting stuff. I mean, I don't live in Maine. I can't vote. But I think I'm fascinated by his candidacy. And I think that that this kind of upstart approach is possibly what might make the Democratic Party relevant again. And I think it's interesting, Janet Mills and a lot of other Democratic candidates, they focus their message on being anti-Trump, being against Trump. That's why they're running, to be a voice against Trump. You know, do people really want that? Do they want somebody who's running to be against something? I think they want somebody running against maybe against the stuff that that Trump is doing. The establishment itself actually backs in many cases. I mean, look at all the ways in which people are being hurt. I go back to one reason I think Trump won in the first place was because he came out against NAFTA. So anyway, we'll see where this goes. It's an interesting election. The one other thing I want to talk about before we cut out of this segment and talk farm and food stuff is Tucker Carlson. Never been a fan. No surprise there, right? So he joins a long list, right? It's not a long list, but it's a significant list of MAGA, former or present or current MAGA talking heads who have been, you know, over the course of their careers in recent years, have been very, very pro-Trump. And now they are speaking out against Trump. A lot of it has to do with the Iran war. I guess that includes Alex Jones, who is about as extreme as you can get. Candace Owens, Megyn Kelly, and now Tucker Carlson. And Carlson, it was pretty telling what he said. He disavowed the president last month in a talk show he does with his brother. He said he was, quote, sorry for misleading people, and that he regretted supporting the MAGA leader, Trump, over the last decade. He said, quote, I campaigned for him. I mean, we're implicated in this for sure. It's enough to say, well, I changed my mind, or oh, this is bad, I'm out. But it's like in very small ways, in very real ways, he's talking to his brother, you and me, and millions of people like us are the reason this is happening right now. That's quite a mea culpa. You know, he goes on to say, quote, I'll be tormented by it for a long time. I want to say I'm sorry for misleading people, and it was not intentional. You know, I don't see how that doesn't have significant impact on other people who voted for Donald Trump. And I know that I've talked before about how Marjorie Taylor Greene's exit from the party, and it was not done quietly. I mean, and she was one of his biggest supporters. I mean, and it wasn't just over Iran with Marjorie Taylor Greene. It was over the budget, I can't remember everything else now, but there were a whole list of things that were bugging her over the Epstein files. But, you know, these exits from Trump's circle are not insignificant. They may not be, you know, they may not be pointing to a huge shift in polling leading up to the midterm election, but there is a gradual shift. And we've seen, you know, already polls for, you know, Trump's approval rating are, what, in the upper to mid to upper 30s? That's pretty low. And, you know, Tucker Carlson has a large following. A lot of people really, really liked him. Wasn't he the top Fox News host for a long time? Probably to Sean Hannity's dismay. But so this kind of exodus from that inner circle is very, very significant. And again, I back to what we were talking about earlier. I don't think Democrats can say, oh, look, nobody, these people don't like Trump anymore. We don't like Trump. So that means voters are going to like us. It's got to be a lot more than that. You can't just run on not liking the president or fighting his policies. You've got to run on what you really believe in. And it's got to be
connected to the day-to-day struggles that people are experiencing. You know, I think an oyster farmer in Maine probably has a way better connection to the daily struggles of Americans than somebody who's been sitting in political office for decades, whether they're Janet Mills, the governor of Maine, or whether they're Chuck Grassley, our U.S. senator. We've talked about other people on this program before who I think have found a way to show that Democrats can be relevant. You know, Representative Marie Gluckenkamp-Perez from Washington State. You know, I mean, there are votes that she's taken that I don't agree with at all, but she is taken on an issue that is resonating with a lot of people, and that's as she calls it, the plague of bright headlights. You know, who would ever think that would be an issue? But yeah, you talk to people, and headlights have gotten a lot brighter. It's a lot more dangerous out there, especially if you've got older eyes. And she's fighting that, and we're starting to see other issues like that, like being the right to repair your own equipment. Those are issues that are important. Bread and butter stuff. Democrats have to get back to that. Hey, folks, thanks for joining me for this segment of The Conversation. Ed Fallon with you here. Back in a minute, Kathy Burns will join me. We're going to be doing our monthly garden Q&A. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our nonprofit partners, including Bold Iowa, Climate March, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, Circle of Peacemakers, and Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility. Kathy Burns is joining me, and it's our monthly garden Q&A. Boy, it's a nice time to be working the garden.
And ours has all kinds of stuff coming up. We have a few more plants to get in, so it's looking good.
You were quoted in a magazine recently.
We were featured as Birds and Bees Urban Farm, you and I, and then I was quoted. We were pleased that we were reached out to by a quarterly magazine called Fresh Pickings. It is a project of the Iowa Food and Family Project, and the writer was April Pearson. So she did a piece about food for all, and featured Birds and Bees Urban Farm along with two other organizations, one called Matthew 25's Cultivate Hope Urban Farm, that's in Cedar Rapids, and another one called Giving Gardens in Grinnell. Yeah.
Hey, so good. And yeah. Questions. We're getting, here's one. Are nights in the 40s okay for tomatoes?
And really, there's no problem with them being in the ground when temps are in the 40s. They just won't grow as quickly if you still have them in a warm place, in a greenhouse or something. If you want them to get bigger, keep them in there. If it doesn't matter, you can put them out. What do you think?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think definitely into the 30s it's problematic, but I think even in the 40s, I need to do a little more research on this myself. But my impression is that it doesn't just slow their growth, it kind of stunts them a bit.
I saw that, you know, when you say the 40s, I guess if you say 40 degrees, that's the lowest 40. Mm. And if you say it's 45 or 48, most of what I saw says it's probably okay. Just won't get growth during that time. So a good thing to look up.
But it doesn't hurt them beyond that cold snap.
That's the general wisdom, okay. But right. People may have more or less exposure to wind, so you've got to assess your situation and do what feels right for you.
So somebody had a question, what kind of soil is best for herbs?
We learned the hard way last year that we had a beautiful oregano plant 2 years ago, and last year it did regenerate, and it just never had any flavor, but also... I discovered that overwatering, what you would call a Mediterranean kind of an herb, will make it pretty flavorless. Mm. So Mediterranean plants that need drier soil with good drainage, you don't want compost on those in particular. Those would be rosemary, lavender, oregano, thyme, sage, anything that you consider Mediterranean. Other herbs. Pretty much will need nice, rich soil and more water.
And we tend to compost because we have a lot of compost, but
we can
probably better
those.
To add like sand or perlite or even...
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Think Mediterranean.
And it's okay to have... We have all our herbs along a row in one space. We just, when we water or apply any nutrients, we just treat them differently.
Somebody wanted to know about potato towers.
Yeah, and they were wondering, they said they're trying it for the first time this year. So, Ed, I thought we could just discuss a couple of revelations we had trying that for the first time last year.
But, yeah, the one thing I learned is you don't want to build the tower too high.
Mm-hmm. Too many layers.
Yeah, or too many layers or too much height. I mean, you want, 3 feet or so at the most? These are short towers.
And the reason is that water drains down. It does,
well,
and doesn't get to the lowest part of the potatoes.
Yeah, and I'm not sure of all the other reasons. Maybe just the weight on top of it, but the potato growth in the top part of the I had one tower that was almost 6 feet tall,
mm-hmm. and the top was doing well.
Top did well. It did. You know, I would say that overall you can get a pretty good amount of production out of a tower,
mm-hmm.
especially if you have limited land. And this year we're doing a combination of beds and towers.
We'll see how they
we'll
go.
How it goes. But it's the also, towers are all shorter.
It's also I think it helps to use a cage around your tower that allows your human hand to go through the cage so that you can reach in and assess moisture level inside the soil in that part of the tower, or even just grab a potato that you feel you could pull it right out at the time without disturbing the whole tower.
Somebody wrote, I planted carrots in mid-March. I still don't see any growth. Are they duds?
There are three things to think about. How deep did you plant them? I've seen people say, well, I planted them 2 inches deep. And
Ooh.
A carrot seed is the teeniest, tiniest little speck. And the rule of thumb in planting is that you plant to the depth of twice the size of the seed.
So that's obviously like eighth of an inch for
correct,
for carrot seed,
barely. Yeah. And I do this. I don't actually cover them with soil. I put soil in my hand and I sprinkle the soil over them. Another factor is they do need consistent moisture, not drowning, but consistent moisture while they germinate. And they like temps a little warmer. And we're having here in central Iowa, very cool.
Hey, Kathy, thank you for joining us for that conversation. Thanks to my guest today, Lee Camp, and to our production team of Sherry Hardina, Forrest Denneman, Charles Goldman, and Kathy Burns. Thanks also to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. And many thanks to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and Real Estate Agent Joe Henry. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners, Circle of Peacemakers, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. And thanks to you, my delightful audience. We'll be back next week for another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.